And it's KVC Arts Now on KVCR, arts and entertainment, as well as the people and places providing it. I'm David Fleming. On this edition of the program, we'll hear once again from Matt Bissonette talking about the band The Redcoats. Also at the core, his brother Greg and Andy Timmons with elements of rock, funk, and fusion. We're exploring their second release, Redcoats 2, going into it with one that was titled for something that we all went through for a while, Mask On, Mask Off. With Mask On, Mask Off again, and now you mentioned that in conversation, just talking about COVID, and so that is where the title would have come from for this. Again, it's not so much the jam session that I thought of with Tilt-A-Whirl, but Mask On, Mask Off, this really feels like something that somebody brought in the charts for, maybe even heavily notated.
Well, the funny thing is that I'll just write all the melodies kind of in my head and write them down on the keyboard, because I'm not a great keyboard player, but I'll slow down the MIDI thing and play these lines that I hear for the melodies. And the funny part with Andy and I is he always goes, oh no, here it comes, because it's not really the easiest lines to transfer to a guitar because I'm playing them on a keyboard. Andy has the amazing ability to make them sound like they're guitar parts that were written for guitar. And after he gets done cursing my name out and hearing the song and going, okay, I'll figure it out, he'll actually memorize, when he goes to Mike's to record, or Mike will go to his house to record the guitar parts, never punches in on the line. He has to memorize the line and play it from top to bottom, which is incredible, because I'm like going, he must have taken so much time to learn these things, because they're really difficult lines and to transfer it to the guitar. So that song and some of the faster songs were a little bit more difficult, where they kind of had to transcribe them and write them out. I would write them out, the music charts on MIDI files, and sometimes it would help, and sometimes the lines would be so fast he would just have to practice them over and over. But he was very patient and cool to do that. And then when we played our gig, he learned everything in his head. No charts or nothing, just shows up at this gig, and Andy played all the melodies and everything like he'd been playing them for years. So that's a testament to him, you know. And I remember with Greg and I, when we first started with Maynard, first year I was in the band, Maynard did a live two-track album in Los Angeles, and then Greg and I did a live album with Maynard, live two-track in San Francisco. And that's online, and people can hear that. It's called Live in San Francisco, and Storm is the name of Maynard's first record. But I remember the pressure of that two-track recording and how it used to be, like, if you screw up, you're letting down a whole big band. If one horn player makes a mistake, you have to do it again. That pressure of doing that, because we were so young, I don't think we were even nervous about it because we didn't know any better. And then having to do all the 2-inch tape stuff where everybody had the Disney sessions and different things where everybody had to play it perfectly, that just made you better, you know, made you a better player. And when the light comes on, you don't freak out, you just play. And then it's led into this time where everybody's punching every note and making everything perfect, where it can lose the charm. Which reminds me real quick of an Elton story. When we were recording with Elton my first time, he would write the song, and when I would just be over his shoulder writing out charts for everybody, because that was what the other bass player did, my friend Bob. So we're in the studio at Village Recording Studio in Los Angeles, and he gets done. He goes, okay, I think I got this song. And Bernie Taupin would bring in some words, and he'd look at the words and go, okay, I'm going to write to this. And so when he had the song figured out, everyone starts getting to their places, and I'm thinking the click track's going to go, and we're going to get this song figured out. But then out of nowhere, Elton just goes, 1, 2, 3, 4, and everybody starts playing. And I'm going, okay, everyone's making mistakes and clams here and there, and then we get done with the song, and there's obvious mistakes all over the place. And I'm thinking, well, okay, we're done. We're going to go in the studio, and now we're going to click it up and play it right. We walk in the room, Elton hears it, and he goes, let me put on a background track. And he goes and sings a background track. And then Davey goes, I'm going to put another guitar part on it to match this thing. And I'm going, what is going on here, man? I mean, what about all these mistakes? You know, when am I going to fix my part? And they're pretty much packing up at this point. And like the song's done. As I'm listening to it, I'm having a Yellow Brick Road flashback where all these funky notes are actually charming, and it kind of has character now, you know? And then they ended up mixing the song that day, and it was done. And when I hear it, every little mistake that I made actually sounds kind of cool. And I go, that's what they did. So we're trying to do a little bit of both eras of that kind of on the seat of your pants, take the first spirit of what came out, you know. But I learned a lot about Elton that day, and the way all those bands would record back then, it was by the seat of your pants, first take stuff, and keep the spirit of the song. Kind of hard to do these days when everything's clicked up and everything has to be quantized and perfect, right. But it's a different age.
Wrapping on Mask On, Mask Off, and you answered the title on that one earlier. I just have to say that one really feels like Return to Forever, amped up. I mean, and just, it's incredible. It's the type of fusion work on this one. You kept on mentioning Weather Report, and for me, maybe it's just because I spoke with Al DiMeola on Tuesday that I keep on returning to Return to Forever, but oh well, anyway. So,
well, that's a huge compliment, because those are bands that we grew up with, the Herbie Hancock, Headhunters, Chick Corea, you know, Return to Forever, all that stuff. I mean, we were playing those songs in our rock bands in college. We'd play like Carry On My Wayward Son, and then we would play School Days, or we'd play at dances, you know, high school dances, and the kids didn't throw things. They listened to it. You know, they kind of knew what was going on. And that is the spirit of a lot of these songs, is that kind of playing that they would do, that Chick Corea would do, and Stanley Clarke and all those guys. They were great compositions, and they were made better by great players, you know?
Yeah.
And you're not going to go wrong when you start with Chick Corea. You know, you're not going to be mad when Joe Zawinul brings a song in the Weather Report, and those guys are just going to make it blossom, you know? So that is the idea behind some of these songs. It's definitely Headhunters. And it's also like Jeff Beck, a lot of Jeff Beck stuff in there. The line on Redcoats 2, it's kind of like Jeff Beck, you know? And once again, it's just that collage of all these styles smashed into one big mishmash, you know?
True.
Can't help it.
Well, and that's one of the great things about it, I think. Well, at least for me, anyway. I suppose it could turn some people off because they just want that boom, boom, okay, give me the auto-tune. And then, you know, but I'd rather have this stew, this gumbo that we were talking about earlier. Something I asked similarly before, but now we're back to another song, All I Want to Do. Again, there are certain elements in here which makes me think that this is about someone specific, not a song about the notion of something. And so I wonder, first of all, if that's true. But then really, my real question is, when this was coming together, did you bring in the song already completed? Then it's a matter of, hey, Andy, give me some sort of, you know, not quite arpeggio, but, you know, these individual notes. So we need a way to lead into what I've written.
Right. I think at that point, we had a couple other songs that we weren't crazy about that didn't really match the other songs. And I had written this song with my friend Rob Renderer. We had a band back in the, about 1999, 2000. The licensing business was just amazing. You'd write songs for companies, and they'd place them in movies and TV, and you get thousands of dollars. You get a front end payment of $1,500. You get your BMI stuff, and then they pay you a back end payment. And then my goal at the time was, I'm going to write a different album of a different style every month and make it look like this band's been together forever. Then it kind of is an album that they can use. Like, this month will be like Foo Fighters. There's a band called Raising Lazarus that I wrote 10 songs for that sounds like Foo Fighters when the Foo Fighters were out. What we did with me and Rob Render and I, we did this for a band called 10 by Tuesday, meaning 10 songs written by Tuesday. And Rob's a great keyboard player in Orange County. So we did an album for licensing thing. And then unfortunately, the whole music business hit the skids when iTunes and people started giving away their songs for free for TV. So the licensing department really suffered for that, and it went downhill. But I always liked that song when we did that song on the album, and I played it for Mike, and he was like, we should just redo this song and just make it more like what the Redcoats would do. So we, you know, gave Andy a solo and just made it jazzier around the edges and stuff. But it's basically the same song, and it's lyrically it's the same thing. It's just, you could take it a million different ways, you know. I mean, I'm going to claim the John Lennon approach on this one.
Perfect.
What does it mean to you, my brother?
Now, going to Still Waiting, this one has a different feel than all of the others. A little less funk, maybe. And now I have to say, I'm working without liner notes here, much like, I don't know, if you had a tourniquet around your wrists before you were trying to play. This really feels crippling to me. Is Still Waiting by chance one that Andy brought in?
No, this one was one that I wrote at the same time as Tilt-A-Whirl during COVID. And our friend Tim Reese, who plays sax with the Rolling Stones, he played sax on it, and it was kind of like a complete weather report song where he played the soprano sax like Wayne Shorter did. Frank Gambale played on the demo of it. It was going to be for a completely different band, more of a straight ahead band. Ron Pedley played on that piano and synthesizer, and we kept all his parts. But that was one that I played for Mike as well, and he goes, well, let's lock this one up more. And so we kept the same track that we used it for this other project and just kind of shifted it over for the Redcoats, because in the end it does sound like us. But I guess it's the most happy jazz out of all the songs, where it kind of sounds a little bit different. But it's actually one of my favorites, and the way that Andy and Ron play off each other, it's amazing. I mean, Andy came in, you know, 3 years later on this track and played it like he was in the room playing a duet with Ron on the solos, like they were actually looking at each other. And that's something that you can't take for granted. That's years and years of gigs for Andy to do that, you know. So, yeah, it does kind of sound like something different from someplace else, and it kind of is, you know.
Yeah.
You got good ears there, pal.
I try to find things on that. And, like, with Andy, Danger, Danger, that's fine. I mean, that's a type of thing that, let's just say, I grew out of. But then anything and everything that you'll find on his solo works or his Sgt. Pepper's album and Electric Truth, he's just amazing.
Yeah.
That's one of the really cool things about this band, about Redcoats, is this is, I think, a quote of yours talking about, we are throwing all of these styles in a big bag, whipping it around, and tossing it out to the people to see if they like it. I just, that's a great thing, going back to that gumbo. Still Waiting, from the Redcoats' second release, Redcoats 2. Back now with KVC Arts, I'm David Fleming. On this edition of the program, I'm speaking once again with Matt Bissonette, bassist and vocalist with the Redcoats, with an exploration of their second release, Redcoats 2, and one which has a much different feel to the rest of the album, Another World, Another Time. Another World, Another Time. There had to be a Moody piece on here somewhere. Is this one of yours as well? Were you the primary writer for all of this and the other guys joined in, or was this a very much a collective effort?
Pretty much all the songs. I mean, I kind of start the songs and write them and then send everything out to everybody. But what we do is kind of the Van Halen approach of everybody's playing on this song, so everybody should be paid for it, and then we're going to split everything down the middle publishing-wise, because in the end, when Greg plays a drum part, he's creating sound that goes on the record that contributes to the song, and everybody is creating it, so whatever it starts from, everybody contributes. So that song, to me, I've seen this movie, I think it was a horror movie years ago, one of those apocalypse end of the world movies where zombies are taking over.
Oh, excellent.
And I remember this one scene where this famous actor, he's a guy from the Full Monty, I can't remember his name, he was playing the part of this movie, and he's on this island with his wife, and the zombies are coming after him, and he takes off on his wife and runs for the boat, and the zombies are going after his wife, and he's so conflicted. But he's so scared, he leaves his wife behind in the window looking at him as he's running to the boat. The soundtrack for that song was so stuck in my brain when I saw it that I wanted to get that kind of emotion of just, not that it would be a horror thing like that or anything, but just kind of a dark sound, something different than the rest of it, where it's kind of the end of the world. It's like your end of your life is coming. You know, what are these questions to these answers you have? So it was a little bit like the sounds of the distorted voice talking on that song. It's kind of like alien stuff or AI stuff taking over, and everyone's views on that is different, but I wanted something spooky. And I can't remember the name of that movie, but that scared the heck out of me. And when I hear this song, I kind of feel that way, where it's kind of just kind of grabs you a little bit and makes you go, where is this going, you know? And, of course, we want to make it uplifting and hopeful, which the chorus does, but it's kind of the darkest song we've ever done. I mean, my whole life I've been writing songs, and it's taken me years to realize the power of a minor chord. You know, it's like I've always written a lot of positive songs that sound good, stuff like that, but lately I'm realizing there's so many amazing dark chords that are as uplifting as a major chord. Yep. So, you know, I'm still trying to figure out how to write songs, man. I still can't get my head around it.
Minor chord, diminished thirds. Okay, let's go.
Exactly.
I have to say, the moment that you were talking about in the movie, I just coincidentally happened to be a zombie nut as well, specifically Romero,
yes.
But it sounds like you're talking about the sequel to 28 Days Later, 28 Weeks Later. That's the moment that it sounds like, where the guy's leaving his wife behind. And
that's it. You know what? When we hang up, I'm going to send you the YouTube video, because I did find it the other day, and I don't want to spend my time looking at it while I'm talking to you, but I'll send it to you in an email. And you'll know it. As soon as you hear it, you're going to go, oh, yeah, that scene. You probably remember it anyway. But, yeah, those movies were really frightening and good.
Oh, without a doubt. I have to state that with the feel of Another World, Another Time. Now, as a person who programmed music shows for, years and years, you know, you have the upbeat stuff and then what I used to call the woo factor, you know, where you can just bring a person up and then let them rest and just go, pump the forehead kind of thing. And so Another World, Another Time, it really just could have closed the album, this wistful, easy winding down, settling in for the night. But then, pump the brakes. Pump the Brakes was probably the first tune that I caught from Redcoats 2, having no idea that it was actually the last tune on the album. So, a couple things about this. So many songs, we get kind of a verse, chorus, repeat, then there's an instrumental, come back to some words. This one, Pump the Brakes, it's almost a reverse song. it seemed to be this incredible instrumental jam, but then the lyrics. Is this by chance two different songs that ended up coming together?
For Another World, Another Time, it really is kind of an homage to Weather Report for the remark you made. And that could be easily played on Wayne Shorter soprano sax on the lines. But when Andy plays the lines on the chorus of that song, it sounds like Jeff Beck on one of his amazing songs, that he just makes the guitar sound like another instrument, which is pretty amazing. But yeah, and that was kind of exactly what you said, the woof moment where you go, and we did think about, it's amazing that you said that, we were thinking about ending the record with that, but I thought that was just going to be too mellow of an ending. Mm. It's kind of like this song thing happens, you have this moment, and then they slap you in the face with this other song from Other World. So with Pump the Brakes, Greg is a huge David Garibaldi fan, and he loves to play complicated beats that are funky, that are not traditional hi-hat, snare-related stuff, because Greg can turn beats around and leave everybody in the dust. He can just lose you super easy. So when I programmed kind of a drum beat for that song, he just took it and made it into something completely different, like he always does. So when I was writing it, I was thinking, okay, so what does this song need to do that's just going to be out of the blue? And instead of it just being a total instrumental tune, let's just throw in a goofy chorus that doesn't have anything to do with anything, you know? And so once we did that part, kind of came up with the pump the brakes line, which is kind of a thing about society, everybody going crazy. You know, Republicans can't talk to Democrats. Democrats can't talk to the Pope. You're either a liberal conservative, you're a Christian or an atheist. It's like all this stuff going around in the world, and everybody has just stopped talking. You know, everyone has stopped relating to each other, and respect has gone out the window. Let's just pump the brakes on this, sit down. We've all got enough in common that we can get along. It's kind of that kind of a message kind of thing. So we got done with the chorus, and I was going, well, you know, it's still pretty cool, but we should do something really stupid and weird. So we came up with the David Letterman rock section of the shuffle thing, which is kind of like the David Letterman theme song that Greg and I used to love so much when we'd go see Letterman. When we were on the road with Maynard, we used to go see David Letterman. And we got to know Will Lee and the guys and just fell in love with that theme song. And we always loved that shuffle. And I just thought this would be a good place to just put a little shuffle in there to have it be an interlude for section. Because my major thing in my life with writing songs is the bridge. The lost art of a bridge songs. Like my favorite bridge ever written was Wang Chung, Everybody Wang Chung Tonight. that bridge on that song is like Sting on steroids. Are you familiar with that one at all?
We were so excited about To Live and Die in L.A. and some other stuff, and then they came out, everybody have fun tonight.
Yeah, and then when it hits that bridge, you go, okay, this is a genius writing bridge. And bridges, to me, are the lost art, and you just don't do it that much anymore because it has to be, don't bore us, get to the chorus. It has to be within the first minute. It has to repeat. It has to be hypnotic. It just kind of, for me, just throwing in a bridge on any song is the most fun thing. The Beatle bridges that are just in there so fast and they're in and out, that's what really floats my boat. So it was kind of a mishmash, but I could see how it could sound like it's three or four different songs, because it kind of is. You're right. You got me.
The bridge on this one, it's right around 220, and it is right when someone says, come on, man. The chords we get from Wally Minko, is he actually quoting Deacon Blues? And if he is, you know what I'm saying there. That's the first thing I heard. And then I was suddenly searching Steely Dan to figure out which song was that.
Oh, man, we love Steely Dan. I mean, who doesn't like Steely Dan? I mean, and what I do when I write on the piano is I just drop my hands on the keyboard, like, close as possible for cluster chords, because they're the closest I'm ever going to get to Steely Dan. I'm a bass player, I'm a singer, and I can kind of get myself through a little bit guitar and a little bit on piano. But thank God for MIDI and for going slow on the chords, because those cluster chords that Steely Dan does, and he's a genius at it, and he knows exactly what he's doing compared to me, who's just kind of trying to hack away at that. But yeah, that is definitely a Steely Dan polychord thing. Like an Elton John typical thing where he plays a chord where Dee Murray would play a different bass note to it. That, to me, is the most amazing thing of writing, when you have chords that are simple chords, but you're adding nines and flat nines and 13s and different things to them that just make it sound like something that you've heard before, and that's Steely Dan. You know, I mean, we've heard these chords, and they've been on pop songs, and they've thrown those chords in there to hip us up, you know? I mean, they made us more intelligent with those chords, and they got away with it on the radio. It's an amazing, amazing thing, you know? So, yeah, that is definitely the influence for those little sections, as with the Gino Vannelli chords, you know? The way that Joe Vannelli would write those chords and stuff, it was just very thought out. I mean, I'm the poor man's version of that, you know, for writing this stuff, you know. But between the way these guys can alter the chords themselves and make them into their personalities, it just makes me look like I know what I'm doing, you know.
Truly.
So Wally Minko and Ron and Andy are masters of that stuff.
I have to say, Matt, this was truly phenomenal. As I mentioned earlier, I only became aware of this band a few months back, even though I was already very well aware of Andy and you guys in different settings. I should state as well that I came to be aware of Redcoats, and I wish I'd been listening to it for decades, because it is really my kind of stuff, and I'm so glad that
it's such an honor that you'd even listen to it at all, being the guy that you are and listening to all the music that you do. I'm just flabbergasted and thankful that you listen to it and that you like it, and I just appreciate you having me on.
Oh, I love it. So, I mean, I'm going to be tracking down hard copies. No, this is the type of thing, it needs to be on the shelf. Right next to Rittenhour, I think it's going to be on my shelf.
Oh, man. You know, real quick, All For Me is kind of also modeled after Lee Rittenhour's Mr. Briefcase, which is
really?
One of our favorite songs. I love that song with Eric Tagg singing, and what a great song that is. But yeah, we would be proud and happy to be anywhere on your shelf, my friend.
Thank you again, Matt.
See you at the potato. You get a steak potato.
Ooh. On this edition of KVC Arts, it's been music from The Redcoats in conversation with bassist and vocalist Matt Bissonette, exploring their second release thoughtfully called Redcoats 2. That's spelled with two D's when you go looking for it. And that said, more at theredcoats.com. And with that, we wrap up another edition of KVC Arts. Thanks again to Matt Bissonette. And here at KVCR, thanks to Rick Dulock, Sandy Hodela, Zach Mays, Champ Chipman, and Shireen Awad. Many past KVC Arts can be found through iTunes, NPR One, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. And most past shows are at kvcrnews.org/arts. I'm David Fleming. Thanks especially to you for listening and for your support. Give any time of the year, day or night, at kvcrnews.org/support. And thanks again.